I think people are just becoming much more conscious today, and especially travelers who've seen climate change, have seen some of the social, you know, change that we need to make around the world.
Insured Nomads proudly supports the New Nomad podcast. Insured Nomads, for the evolution of insurance, for the revolution of travel. For all your travel, medical, and support needs, please visit our website at insurednomads.com. We support our location-independent community worldwide.
Welcome to the New Nomad Podcast, hosted by Alan and Andrew of Insured Nomads. Join us as Alan and Andrew interview and explore the community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Tune in to incredible discussions with thought leaders each week that will help you take full advantage of the cross-border remote work lifestyle. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us on the New Nomad Podcast. Today's guest, Paul Tyler, Chief Marketing Officer at Nassau Financial Group. And I think this is going to be really an interesting conversation today because we're having Paul on because we get a lot of questions from our Nomad audience that how can I preserve my wealth, protect my savings, and go forward in this lifestyle? And so many of you out there who listen to this podcast are quite young. How do I get started? And then we have another group that might be in retirement, moving to, as an earlier podcast talked about, rewirement, where you're using your funds to see more of the world, experience more things. How do I preserve that? How do I keep that moving forward? And certainly many of you out there have seen the widening savings gap in the world. And frankly, we want to have a little bit of a dialogue on how we can help you with that. And I'm sure we'll be getting into a lot of different thoughts there. You know, Andrew, you've traveled about, and one of the issues for our audience is, you know, as you move around, sometimes you're not there long enough to get into Social Security of the particular country, whatever they may call that, or Medicare or whatever might be the name. So it means that you really have to look at your finances probably a little bit closer than somebody who might live, let's say, just live in the United States for 40 years and have Social Security protections after they retire, as opposed to somebody who's been moving to many different locations. So I'd love your thoughts.
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma as people are exploring the option of living outside their home country before they thought of retiring, or they're thinking, I can keep working from there, even though I'm going to retire in 3 years. I can go ahead and go to Costa Rica or wherever they're thinking. But there are a lot of factors at play, the tax liability, when they should do it, what does Medicare cover? I was reading a chat that our customer service was having recently on through our website. Someone saying, well, why should I get expat health insurance? Because I'm covered by Medicare and it's so much cheaper than what you're offering me. Well, of course, yes, but Medicare doesn't cover you in that country. And it's subsidized by the government because you paid in all these years. And so this is going to be fun hearing Paul's take. And yeah, looking forward to having him on today.
So Paul, you and I have had some conversations in the past and really welcome you to the podcast. And you and I, kind of our first conversation was, you know, a lot of people don't really understand what they're getting into when they pack up and leave the United States, to Andrew's point about like Medicare, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But we'd just love to have your opening conversation on some of the thoughts that we brought up today about, you know, protecting yourself, protecting savings, retirement plans, perhaps, you know, some of the different items that you think people overlook and maybe your journey in helping them make sure they don't make those missteps.
No, Alan, thank you so much. And Andrew, for having me on your show. I think that, you know, building the business you're both are building is, I think, really exciting. And I think it potentially brings a lot of value to people who are, you know, building businesses and traveling in different locations. I think you asked some really good questions. And I think if we just started with the retirement savings question, you know, you got to think ahead. You know, yeah. You really have to. It's just like you're packing your bags carefully in your suitcases. You really need to think about your finances before you start to do something more independent. You know, I had dinner with a friend of mine who took his wife to Croatia, and they rented a motorcycle and drove. I don't know, they must have gone like 200 miles or something. Had a wonderful trip, no rain, it was great. And he showed me a picture of this motorcycle bike, and there were just two, you know, side pouches. And he said he gave his wife three bags to pack all her stuff in it. And they had a wonderful trip, but I think it's a good analogy for what you need to do. You know, you really need to think ahead like that from your retirement savings from a number of different perspectives. One is, you know, if you are a U.S. citizen, and planning to spend time out of the United States. It's a lot easier to set these accounts up when you're actually physically in the U.S. than it is the minute you are outside. You don't think about this much because we're, you know, especially if you spend all your time here in the U.S. and you're used to 1-800 numbers and people validating your location without really asking. A lot of these 800 numbers, you know, coming to the firms won't accept calls outside the U.S. In fact, you know, I'm embarrassed to say a couple of companies I've worked for, including our current one, it's really hard to get to the 800 call center if you're outside the U.S. if you have issues. So I think you need to think ahead around the types of services you're going to need, establish your travel habits early and before you leave. And even sometimes that's a little tricky to do because, you know, you talk to somebody, they don't really put the file on record the way they want to. And I think also it reduces confusion when you actually put money into account or open an account. Where are you? Right. Very difficult to open up an account, even if you live in New York, you live in Connecticut, you live in Maryland. Very hard to complete that transaction if you're offshore, even though your residence is there. You get a lot of questions from compliance departments. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. So I think one is, you know, do the planning now while you're in the U.S. rather than try to do it remotely, or if you do it or schedule it when you're back in the U.S. and take your finances there. This may be one-on-one tips for you and for your audience, but it's something I've stumbled on as I've had to work with expats trying to take money in accounts or out of accounts. So just be aware of the logistics, setting it up, and then how are you actually getting service on your accounts? And now, Andrew, you raised a question. Listen, I'm very U.S.-centric. Social Security is probably the most valuable retirement asset most people have. They don't realize it. You know, people think, well, I'm going to get a check. Check's only a couple $1,000s. Well, actually, you know, let's do the time, you know, let's do a net present value of what those payments are worth. And that's probably more than, if you look at people's Social Security payments and you actually value it, it's probably worth more than a lot of people's homes. It may be even worth more than what people have in a retirement savings account. Now, if you don't do that, and you're not going to be paying into the Social Security income, you got to take this retirement plan into your own hands, right? Got to think independently. You've got to plan, where will you be when you retire? What is the taxation when you retire? These are some real important issues you've got to think through well in advance so you don't have a surprise and find yourself having to, you know, live off in that island by yourself. Yeah. When you're at age 70.
Yeah, having spent time in long-term stays in many different countries myself, I know how hard it is at times to get money into the country. And using system thinking, oh, I'll just send it from my account to account somewhere else using Western Union. I've done that in the tens of thousands and then had to fight to get my money. It is a pain. Yes. And so thinking through in advance, researching, how easy is it to transfer funds in and actually get it? And are you going to be taxed on it when you get it there? I've had to fight through to not be taxed on my own money, transferring it from one country to another. And many times people don't think about that. They think, oh, I'll just put it on my credit card. Well, the credit card company could cancel your account because they see you don't live in the home country anymore. FACTA has some influence there. Sometimes even your bank account is canceled because you decide to let them know that you live somewhere else now. And rather than using a UPS store as your address or something. So there's some interesting aspects with a lot of these things that, you know, often aren't thought of in advance.
No, and unfortunately, a lot of the fraud detection programs will trip you up because, you know, they look for typical transactions. And the minute you fall, you know, fall out of that normal distribution curve, yeah, credit card gets locked up quick. Money gets flagged on an OFAC report when it shouldn't be. Not good things to have happen. So this does require a lot of planning. So you're right. Taxation of money as you're transferring across country is a big issue, big question to think through carefully. You know, you want to make sure that you think you're making as much money and put as much money away in the bank as you actually are.
So quick question for you on time value of money. So a lot of the conversations I have with our audiences, you know, many of them are living the lifestyle from different ways. And one of the conversations I have with many of the younger folks that are out there living this lifestyle is, you bought a stock now, and 40 years from now, it's an excellent stock. And I'll use the example is I saw something recently that if you bought one share of stock, like of Coca-Cola, of all things, like in the 70s, it's now worth like $180,000 or, you know, something along those lines. Is maybe some of your comments about we have two different audiences here. Well, actually we have multiple audiences, but maybe some of your tips on getting started when you're younger and using time value of money for your protection. And then some of us who are a little bit later on trying to play catch up, what might you be doing about protecting your savings or having it go as long as possible in that space?
In my head, Alan, I put the sort of saving strategies into three buckets. You've got exactly what you described. You got your younger person who should just pay off debt. Most of these kids are kids. You know, probably wouldn't call them kids, but, you know, younger people up to age 30 or 32 are typically carrying huge amount of college debt right now. So probably the number one goal for sort of that bucket is pay off all your student debt. Start to save some money, pay off, get debt, eliminate debt immediately, because people don't understand, you know, they see these credit cards, they see the ability to roll money from one card to another. But, you know, I'll tell you that if 15%, 16% APR can eat up an awful lot of earning power so quickly. So pay down the debt, start to save, bucket one. And this, a lot of what people are doing in that early stage are really just learning how to budget, you know, learning how to earn, getting a job, paying down debt, starting to save. Kind of a basic, you know, and that involves budgeting, basic, you know, financial, just good, developing some good financial habits early on. You know, get a good credit score. Okay. Not that you're going to use it, but get the good credit score. You get the good credit score by, yeah, borrowing a little bit with your credit cards, but paying them off. Middle period, and I would say probably 30 to 55, just a lot about asset allocation. So great, you've got some savings. How are you allocating this stuff? You know, the old rule of, you know, put 60% in equity, 40% in bonds, you know, it actually works. It actually works. Okay, maybe it's 70%, 30%, but you know, whatever the number is, allocate your assets appropriately. You mentioned a stock. I wish I had bought that Apple stock instead of my iPod. I wish I'd purchased the Tesla stock. I still haven't learned this. I wish I'd bought the Tesla stocks to the car. Oh well. But you know, don't try to pick the stocks. Just pick the sectors. Do the allocation. You know, follow the lot of the maxims. Put your money. Get in some. You know, the one thing you can control is allocation, and the other allocation of your assets. The other thing you can control are expenses. So find low cost funds. Okay. Low-cost services, allocate your money out. Listen, if you get the Coca-Cola stock, that's awesome. Congratulations. But you know what? Rather than try to, you know, let's get some doubles, consistent singles and doubles over the next 20 years. And, you know, if you get a home run, that's terrific. God bless you. But, you know, it just making contact with that ball on a regular basis, you'll be just fine. Now, when you start to get into that 55 point up, you need to think a little more defensively. You know, I think about it as you're at the casino table. Maybe you want to start like getting a little bit of insurance. Maybe you want to start pulling some of those chips off the market. That's really where our core products, annuities, come in. People say to me, "Well, annuities, are they good investments?" They're not investments. They're insurance. Andrew, do you have home and owner's insurance where you are, renter's insurance? I bet you do, right?
Absolutely. Who wouldn't, right? But we think about our car and our home before we think about our health and our life, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Generally speaking. What was the ROI in your homeowner's insurance? I hope hopefully it was poor because your home didn't burn down, right?
Correct. And we hope it's the same with our health and with our retirement.
No, exactly. Now, health's a whole very interesting topic because you know, you think of how expensive health insurance is. Why is it? Because the care is so expensive, right? And how do you protect yourself against that? So, yeah, happy to talk to you more about health insurance.
And I got a question that ties into that. One of the things in your podcast that I thought was really, and by the way, to our audience, Paul Podcast, very interesting, thought-provoking, has something that I didn't even know in all my time in the industry is how a credit score has a correlation for life expectancy that you find. I'd love to, you know, for you to, you know, talk a little bit about that. And certainly one of the things we've also seen in some countries is actually medical debt is the top type of debt that people have, which obviously would hurt your credit score, but a little bit of holistic nature there, my friend. But maybe your comment on that too, tying back to healthcare.
Oh, sure. You know, the old adage, health, wealth, and happiness is true. They're so linked. And, you know, the auto insurance industry was probably one of the first insurance sectors to pick up on the power of credit score in predicting the likelihood, Alan, that you'll get in a car crash. It's interesting, right? Now, it's still today a key factor in determining what your rates are. And there's something about credit scores and how well you take care of your car, how well you drive. Well, turns out that same credit score is exceptionally predictive of your mortality. Now, why? You know, does one cause, is this a dependent or independent variable? I don't know. We can get somebody on, you could get another guest who's a little smarter than I am on this topic. But I think generally, you know, debt causes stress. Not paying your bills on time causes stress, makes you not feel comfortable. Maybe perhaps going and getting health care, you know, getting regular checkups, going to the dentist. And so we found that it's absolutely predictive of mortality. The better your credit score is, the longer you're going to live. Now, credit score does not equal wealth. It means that you've paid your bills off in time, and you do take a little bit of credit, but you know how to manage credit. So it's not totally avoiding, but you're using some of it. Now, it's interesting. Life insurance world, though, states actually prohibit us from using life insurance to underwrite. Can't use it.
Interesting. Quick other question for you on the financial side. So you touched upon this quickly. So the difference between, like for instance, I own some stocks, but I also have an annuity that I purchased yes. that kicks in at age 65 until I pass, which hopefully will be many, many, many years later. Could you explain to our audience a little bit the concept of annuities and maybe even why somebody like me might want to buy an annuity that kicks in at 65?
Sure. A couple of reasons. Now, again, you use the word annuity, that can describe many different types of products. In fact, when you get into international markets, for instance, many life insurance policies actually behave like annuities. It's interesting. It's not the same product. So I don't know how international your audience is. So what I'm going to describe is a fairly universal term. It just may not be called that. Essentially, an annuity is a guarantee against... It's a protection against living too long. Very simply, you know, started trying to think of the history. People have probably heard of tontines. Tontines was one of the earliest forms of annuities. You know, we would all put our money in a table, you know, table together. And there are different formulas of how this would work. But whoever, you know, whichever one of us outlives all the others gets the money. That's in its simplest form. And that's an annuity. Insurance companies effectively are just pooling lots of risk and saying, we sell enough people that we've got a normal distribution of people living. Some people are going to live not that long. Annuity wasn't a good deal. Some people are going to live exactly the way the actuaries say they're going to live. They're going to die on that date. You know what? Probably broke even, maybe. And then for the few of us, though, who are on that tail end, we've done everything right. We've had good genetics. You know, you're taken care of. So it's essentially insurance policy that you're always going to have. You're going to have money if you actually live longer than you think you will. So, you know, Social Security is in essence an annuity. You know, you just have to decide when you take it. The longer you wait, the more you get up to a point in time. And so that annuity is a protection. But a lot of these annuities also have income, guaranteed income stream. So, Alan, I don't know your particular annuity. Do you know if you have a guaranteed income provision on
your... Yeah, I do. And also, if something happens to me, there's my spouse. So to our audience out there, you know, in the simplest terms, I basically gave an insurance company money when I'm much younger than 65. They held on to the money, invested it, hope it went well. And then at age 65, for argument's sake, I could get $1,000 a month for the rest of my life. And then if I was to pass, depending how it's structured, my wife could pick up that $1,000, or it could drop down to like $800 or $600, because sometimes the spousal benefit's different. But to Paul's point, because of traveling around so much and maybe not getting the Social Security income, it's nice to have an annuity income, but also to give the insurance company that money, Paul. It means I must have had to save over the years or invested well to get there. And between you and me, I was very fortunate. And some of us in my age bracket, the stock market was very good, and these target date funds that have been out there have been very good in the last, what do you say, 15 years or so, as the stock market has moved quite a bit more than salaries. So that's another issue for folks out there. I'm sorry to get so wonky. I'll hand it back to you, Paul, but that's kind of how I describe
no,
it.
No, well, Alan, it's terrific. And it's a great way to create streams of income that you can tap into that either make up for the fact you don't have Social Security or create income in addition to Social Security. So layer your income. So if you've got assets, you can put people buy immediate annuities, they'll buy deferred annuities. But at the core, it gives you an ability to say, you know what, I'm going to give myself a raise in retirement. And another interesting fact, Andrew and Alan, is studies have said people in retirement who have regular checks, either from Social Security or from pensions or from annuities, actually are happier because you don't have to worry about this stuff. You know, you don't have to worry about drawing down your assets, trying to find it, follow some kind of complicated, simple yet complicated 4% withdrawal rule. Some of these simple rules of thumb actually turn out to be pretty complicated to manage if you really think through what that means when you're doing it. So it simplifies things, and it's nice to have sort of make somebody else worry about how they're going to write that check each month to you.
Paul, quick question on technology. How do you think things like artificial intelligence and other technologies are going to help our audience in these areas?
Yeah, Alan, I think it's a lot of potential. I think probably over the last 10 years, a lot of VC money has gone into companies trying to create, you know, robo-advisors. And I think there have been some phenomenal tools built. As it turns out, economically, it's most of these companies have found more success actually supplementing real advisors. And you think of all the issues we've kind of covered here that are involved in retirement planning, your age, where you want to live, your tax bracket. I'm going to go on and on and on like this. Oh, I've got to think about healthcare. Need to think about your assisted living. At some point, you know, we all need this. Oh, and you want to leave a legacy to somebody. I think the biggest impact we'll see is an advisor is going to be able to provide much more comprehensive advice than ever before, those who use the tools. So I think it's going to turbocharge those advisors who really embrace technology. And I wish more did, but some really good ones out there are doing it, and I think they will be the advisors you want to turn to over the next 10 years.
Well, Paul, this is interesting because I know some people plan on their annuity for their life insurance benefits. When a spouse dies, they just count on it going straight into an annuity so that it's multiplied over time, bro. And and their charitable giving being utilized through an annuity, and just so the organization receiving it isn't getting that lump sum, but they're getting something that last over time. I think it's incredibly intelligent to make your charitable giving through annuities. And it's wise for the recipients as well to know that, okay, great, we could fall apart, but we have this guaranteed income coming in for the next 20 to 30 years. And a lot of times people, when they're planning these moves, kind of forget their generous side. And this next generation needs to keep that in mind, that, you know, a lot of our social impact organizations are relying on the public to keep them alive. So if we're relocating, don't forget the people that are keeping our world sustained, because the government can't do it. It takes all of us helping out. What's your thoughts on, real quick, because I know we're running out of time, and you've got the podcast called That Annuity Show. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
So I know that folks are going to learn about topics like this and others on there, but if you can hit that one thing, because social impact is big in my world, and I think that's a great way to use annuities.
Legacy planning is an incredibly powerful way to approach financial planning, right? Life insurance also works very, very, very well for creating endowments and, you know, turning $1 into more than you ever would have been able to imagine in your lifetime. I think annuity is another great way to, as you say, Andrew, create a stream of income that can be directed to a particular group or cause in a way that makes sure that they, you know, it's there for a very, very long time. I think ESG is becoming, I think people are just becoming much more conscious today, and especially travelers who've seen climate change, have seen some of the social, you know, change that we need to make around the world. And there are just, I would say, an explosion of options that are available both in products as well as investment strategies for the people who are so inclined.
So, Paul, we've come to that time in our podcast that we've asked all of our guests, and looking forward to your thoughts on perhaps naming an overlooked person, place, experience, product. We've kind of actually covered an overlooked product today, annuity. Yes. So we could probably put that one to the side of the table, right?
That's sure.
So we've done a little bit of overlooked already. But yeah, could you share with us an overlooked person, place, experience that you yourself personally or professionally would love to share with our audience?
Sure. I think one of those, one of the areas that I'll pick place, South Africa. I was fortunate enough to go pre-pandemic. I guess this was three and a half years ago. I went to Cape Town. Just loved that place. What a beautiful, beautiful part of the world. And I think, I certainly hope more people, you know, travel, make the trip. It's a long journey, but I think the people, the community, and I think just the geography was absolutely spectacular. So there's my place.
Well, Paul, thank you. I must agree. South Africa is one of those places that many should experience if it's not on your list already. Thank you for joining us today. What is the top place that people should find you? Is that LinkedIn or podcast? We'll have different links in the show notes that of course you'll provide to us, but what's that best way to reach you?
Sure. Yeah. LinkedIn is probably the easiest place to find me, Paul D. Tyler. I think I'm the only one there. And yeah, we do have a podcast, That Annuity Show. We really are talking to advisors, agents, anybody in the industry, you know, who's really passionate about the retirement space. But it's actually, we've had a lot of people who are just trying to plan out their own retirement, listen to the show and give us feedback and questions. So yeah, find us at either place would be great. And or my company's website is nfg.com. So it stands for Nassau Financial Group, nfg.com. And we're based in Hartford, Connecticut.
And a tremendous company. I think how many companies have been around since 1851 and almost had 400,000 policies. So well done, Paul. And I'm sure quite a few of those are annuities given our conversation today.
Yeah.
Which is excellent. Yeah. So Andrew, we come to the point in the podcast of what did we learn today? And I'll mention something. I just loved our conversation. One thing I'm going to take away that I learned today, not only preparing for this episode, but talking to Paul, is how the credit score has a correlation for life expectancy. I never saw that correlation. You've heard me in the past on previous podcasts talk about playing tennis as the longest indicator of life expectancy of any sport you may play. Well, now I can add a second one to that about keeping your credit score up. So Andrew, I'll let you do the close with what did you learn today?
I was reminded once more of something that I've said many times to people, and that is get out of debt before you relocate internationally. Folks think, oh, okay, I've got all this going, but things can shift and then you're stuck somewhere. And you're thinking, okay, that's just the ruin of credit report, everything else. You know, life can be much more stable if you take care of things before you go. Your power of attorney, your will, your documents, opening new accounts, all those things, at least a year before you go overseas. Get it all settled. This has been great. Thank you, everyone, for joining us again today. If you will, subscribe, write us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening, and join us again next week. Thank you, everyone.
Insured Nomads proudly supports the New Nomad podcast. Insured Nomads, for the evolution of insurance, for the revolution of travel. For all your travel, medical, and support needs, please visit our website at insurednomads.com. We support our location-independent community worldwide.
Thanks for tuning in to the New Nomad podcast, where we bring together an incredible community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review. For more amazing tips to help you take advantage of the cross-border lifestyle, please visit us at insurednomads.com/podcast. See you next week.